Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives, sharing their expertise and life stories, making a difference one word at a time. Now, here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome. Well, joining me today, Saba Tahir, the number one New York Times bestselling author of the series Ember in the Ashes. It's written for young adults, but I actually know a few adults who indulge too. She's written a new, deeply personal contemporary novel that Saba says is the book of her heart, and we find out why in our conversation. The book All My Rage was 15 years in the making. The story begins in Lahore, Pakistan, and moves to Juniper, California. It's inspired by Saba's own childhood, growing up in California's Mojave Desert at her family's 18-room motel. In her own words, Saba says it was there that she spent her time devouring fantasy novels, raiding her brother's comic book stash, and reading them too, and playing guitar rather badly. The book is hot off the press. It's already received great reviews from writers such as Jodi Picoult and Nicola Yoon. And a TV adaptation of the story is already in the works with Picture Start. So that's all very exciting stuff. Saba Tahir has been an author since 2015. Before that, she was a journalist and actually wrote her first book while working nights as a copy editor. So here's my guest, Saba Tahir, and her book, All My Rage. Saba Tahir, welcome to the show. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Very pleased to have you. And your book is already getting rave reviews. But let's just talk a little bit about you before we dive into that, since we haven't chatted before. One of the things that I found interesting was that you began your career with the Washington Post as a proofer, a copy editor, on an intern basis, was it?
That's right. Yes, I was an intern long, long ago. And then they brought me back for a second internship and then gave me a job, which changed my life. So,
yeah, and it wasn't, I mean, it was a not necessarily an easy internship for you, I understand.
No, I was working on the international desk as a copy editor. And copy editors at that time at the Washington Post, you know, wrote headlines, captions, proofread, fact checked. It was sort of a jack of all trades type job. And I had not had much experience in a professional paper. I'd only ever worked at a student paper. So I was really thrown directly into the frying pan.
Right.
I survived, though. So.
But what a great experience, because then that led to other things and, of course, exposed you to great stories, difficult stories, new stories that sparked ideas for your first book.
That's correct, yeah. So working on the international desk, I was reading about, you know, wars, bombings, genocides, child soldiers, you know, occupations, all sorts of things that were happening in the world, and that sort of seemed to be mostly prevalent in countries where most of the people were people of color. And yet I wasn't necessarily seeing any of those stories reflected in fantasy fiction, which is one of my favorite genres to read. And that actually is really what spawned my first book, which is the first in a series, which is called An Ember in the Ashes, about a young brown woman who is, you know, trying to upend a dictatorship, essentially.
Right. And what made you choose to write young adult fiction?
I think that young adult fiction, the audience forces you to be honest. You know, you can't write for a teenager and sugarcoat things or act like, you know, life is easy when it's not. I was forced, you know, in both my fantasy and in this new contemporary book to kind of show the reality of these kids' lives, both in the struggle, but also in the beauty and the humor and having a crush on someone and falling in love and friendships and, you know, loyalties, all of those things required a lot of honesty. With All My Rage specifically, what I really enjoyed about writing for teens was that, you know, it allowed me to have a lack of resolution. Or a resolution that was a little bit more ambiguous. you know, I didn't feel like I had to either, you know, end it happily or end it sadly. I felt like I had the freedom to kind of end it in a way that that was realistic, because that's what my readers expected me, and I wouldn't want to disappoint them.
Right, right. And I'm, you know, I'm struck every time I read a young adult book that's really making, you know, headlines. I'm struck by how different young adult books are than when I was growing up, because it was all kind of airy-fairy, if you will. I know I stopped reading kids' books about when I was about 11 or 12, and I started reading my mom's books after that, because they didn't have the kind of meat and they didn't cover the topics and the issues that the books today cover. And I'm wondering if, as an author, as a writer, how much responsibility you feel in sharing things, because I think those years are very formative as a reader. What's your perspective on that?
I think that, again, it really for me comes back to being an honest writer, somebody who portrays the world as it really is. Now, I can be writing about a fantasy world with, you know, imaginary creatures, but my characters still have to have honest and realistic goals, you know, motivations. They have to, in terms of how they deal with each other, it has to feel real. It can't feel fake. So, you know, if I'm, for example, writing about a world that is, you know, a brutal world, a world, you know, ruled by a dictatorship, you know, it can't be all fun and games, right? Because that's not what would really happen in a dictatorship. So I ended up doing quite a lot of research for that. And then in the world of the book we're talking about today, All My Rage, you know, it takes place in the Mojave Desert, which is where I grew up. And it's a tough life out there for a lot of kids. And I wanted to be honest about that and show that, you know, these kids aren't kids with, you know, one issue. It's compounded, right? One thing leads to another. A parent who has an addiction issue, well, that leads to an issue of financial resources and, you know, being broke. And then that leads to maybe not focusing on school as much, which leads to a limitation in terms of what, you know, one can do in their future, you know, in sort of the traditional sense. Right? All those things are connected, and it was really important to me to reflect that honestly. That's what I try to do when I write YA. And I agree with what you were saying, that, you know, when we were younger, there wasn't really that sort of transition age group for literature. Like,
yeah.
It felt like it was kids, and then it was adults.
Yeah, yeah.
That's kind of it.
Yeah, definitely. So I love this. You say that many authors talk about the book of my heart. I tore this book from my heart over the course of many years and did many versions of it. It's a story demanded to be told, a love letter to the desert and rock music and tiny motels and the kinds of friendships that save your life. So tell us why this book is so important to you. I know some of it's based on your own childhood, but this is a fiction story. All My Rage is fiction. Why you wanted to write this story?
I started writing All My Rage 15 years ago. My parents had sold this motel that I grew up at, and I didn't really have a sense of closure. I didn't get to see it before they sold it. And I think I started writing the story about a motel kind of to deal with that. And very quickly I realized that I didn't know what I was doing and that I was struggling with the story. So I kind of pushed it to the side and I started working on, you know, this fantasy series. But I would call All My Rage my anger book, because every time I was angry about something happening in the world or to me personally, I would work on this book and I would throw in all my emotion and, you know, my frustration and my rage, essentially. Into this book and into these characters. And it ended up becoming almost like me having a conversation with myself. You know, and that's why I said that it was so much, you know, a book torn from my heart, because I wrote this book in isolation. I didn't share pages. I didn't talk about it with anyone. It was just, like I said, it was this conversation. It required a lot of patience and a lot of kindness. For myself, I'm not someone who's ever been focused on, like, you know, self-love or self-care, but upon reflection, this book required a lot of love and hope to write, you know, both love for who I'd become as an adult and hope for this little kid out in the desert who didn't know how to deal with all the difficulties that came the way of her and her family, and who survived them anyway. And so that's what I mean when I say, you know, I sort of tore the book from my heart. It was a difficult conversation, but somehow, you know, I managed to have it. It took a long time, but we got there in the end. So.
Right. Well, growing up in the desert is a whole different experience than growing up in a city. So I want to share the story with listeners, first of all, so we can go a little bit deeper into that. And I don't want to give anything away, so I'd ask you to do that if you would.
So All My Rage takes place in the Mojave Desert. It is the story of three characters. Two of them are teenagers. Their names are Noor and Sal, or Salahi Bean. They were best friends, but they're not anymore, and we learn over the course of the book why and what happened between them. And the third character is Misbah, and she is the mother of Salahuddin, and we start with her story also when she's a teenager, but we travel with her over across time, and we learn how she comes to America and what happens there to her. The story is really meant to be coming of age. It's about how these kids are trying to survive this town that really seems set on destroying them, how they deal with problem after problem, you know, how they survive problem after problem, and how they, Noor, who wants to go to college, you know, how she's able to try to realize that dream, and Sal, who wants to save this business that his parents run and that his mother valued so much, what that takes from him and what that costs him. Mm-hmm. That's what the story is about.
And events lead to Noor and Sal questioning what friendship is really worth. And I'm wondering if that's an experience that you yourself had when you lived in the desert. Because at the end of the book, you give a credit to, I think it was SLM, Thanks for Friendship in a Lonely Playground. I would imagine it would be kind of lonely.
Yes. I had a lot of friendships in the desert that were formative, but the one with that person was probably the most formative.
How so?
I met them when I was very young. For a long time, it felt like they were my only friend, and they always defended me all the way, you know, through our young adulthood, all the way into high school. But they also dealt with a lot of personal problems in their own life. Those are not my stories to share, so I won't. You know, it was a friendship that saved my life, I felt. They were there for me when it felt like, you know, I was alone. And that's the type of thing that you don't forget.
Right, right. So how much of your own childhood did you pour into this?
You know, there's a lot of me in these books, right? So it's probably more than I'll ever be able to fully untangle. But I feel like personal experience becomes really relevant to writing when it's an experience that others can relate to, particularly in how it makes the reader feel. So a lot of All My Rage is about this universal experience of being in an inescapable situation, right, where you have no good choices. A situation where you're sort of overwhelmed by all the things, like, you can't fix or you can't magically make disappear. Mm-hmm. There are so many people who can relate to that. So, you know, All My Rage is, it's about these two young people with so much potential who are trying to make the best of difficult circumstances and surrounded by this world that doesn't give them the benefit of doubt and assumes the absolute worst. And that's something that I do relate to, is, you know, people just assuming the worst about me. And I really wanted to, in the book, answer the question of, you know, how do you survive that? How do you have hope in that situation? I know that I survived it, so I wanted to write a story about characters who are trying to do the same.
Right, right. So let's talk about the character Sal and how you formulated him. It has an incredible amount of weight on his shoulders as a young person, right?
Absolutely. I think as adults, we often look at young people and think they have it easy. I've heard that. I've heard friends say that. Oh,
right.
You know, don't you remember when you were a teenager? It was so much easier. You know, oh my gosh, they don't know how easy they have it. And I don't think that's always true. And I think as adults, we really forget that. We forget that as young people, not only are we not equipped the way we are as adults, not only do we not have as much life experience, you know, as adults might have, but a lot of kids don't have support. They don't have anyone to rely on. They feel completely alone and isolated. And Slavine is one of these characters who who is experiencing that. He feels alone. He is alone. He is trying to run this motel that meant so much to his mother almost entirely by himself because he feels like he owes it to her. And that in turn touches on immigrant communities and the relationships between immigrant children and their parents. And that's something I experienced directly, the feeling of being reminded over and over of what your parents gave up for you, what they gave up in coming here. And I don't begrudge, you know, that assertion. I think my parents absolutely gave up so much to come here. And I think many, many immigrant children would agree with that and say, you know, I know that my parents gave up so much to come here, but how long do you pay for that as a child? Like, how long do you pay that cost?
Right, right. I've heard many stories, true stories of people whose parents were immigrants. And because they sacrificed so much, there is a lot expected of them. In fact, I've heard you share a story about when you didn't get the kind of grade your dad wanted in math. And I thought I can kind of relate to that math thing. I hate math too, but but even as a young child, you seem to have some kind of understanding that that wasn't really that important.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things where it's drilled into you. And again, I cannot speak for obviously every immigrant, right? But it was drilled into my family that, you know, our parents gave up a lot to come to America and they did it for us. And, you know, there are some, I remember, I think it was Hasan Minhaj joking about, you know, how, you know, he had said, you know, his parents gave up, you know, so much to come here or something like that. And how, you know, he was kind of like, did you really know? you know, in my parents' case, though, it really was a huge sacrifice.
Right.
You know,
right.
I mean, you know, my father went from being an engineer to, you know, essentially working, you know, a job that was, you know, didn't require him to use his brain quite as much. And that required a lot of dealing with people who looked down on him. And he did that because he was just trying to make a life for his family.
Hmm. And so let's talk about Noor, Sal's friend. She also works in family business. She works with her uncle's liquor store, and she's secretly trying to make her break there. Something that I think many people have that urge to do. Do you think that urge is intrinsic in people? Because some people are quite content to kind of stay there, and others just know there's something else different out there. I actually, you know, coming from England, I can remember when I was about 11, just knowing somehow that someday I was going to move from where I was and go overseas. Weird, but I just didn't want to settle there where we were.
Yeah, I think it really depends on the person. And I think you can see that even within families, right? There are families where, you know, you'll have a child who is perfectly happy staying in the same neighborhood, the same town, you know, working for a family business or working in, a field that's related to the family business, you know, and wanting the same for their own children. And then they might have a sibling who's like, I'm out of here.
So, yes, yeah.
I'm leaving, right?
Yeah.
There's a great book, The Unthinkable Greta James by Jen E. Smith, that's just come out. We actually have the same publication date, but her book is actually about, you know, a young woman who leaves the small Ohio town to go become a rock star, and how she has a brother who stays and who is perfectly happy having stayed. So I think it just depends, depends on the people. I think that Noor specifically is dealing with a situation that's pretty untenable. You know, her uncle wants her to work in, this. It's not like, you know, working in a family business where you can, you know, advance your career and maybe one day become, you know, the CEO or something. It's like he wants her to help him run a liquor store.
Mm-hmm.
And she doesn't really see any hope in that. And she doesn't see any hope being around him because they have a very contentious relationship. And so she sees college as her way out. There are other children who see college as, as something that's like a prison, you know, because they have to go to the one that their parent went to. And if they don't, then everyone is going to be disappointed at them and they have to become a lawyer. So it just depends on the child. And so for Noor, college is freedom, but for someone else, it might not be.
Right, right. What kind of scenes are hardest for you to write? What do you have most fun with, and what presents the most problem to you?
You of this book in general, I'm used to writing fantasy. I've written 4 fantasy books. I've written fantasy stories. That's sort of my wheelhouse. And this book was, like I said, not really ever supposed to see the light of day. So what was difficult for me was really making that switch to writing realistic fiction, to remind myself, hey, you can't fix this with magic. You know,
right.
You can't put in a battle scene here to like create some tension. You have to figure out other ways to do that. But I would say what I love to write about the most is hope in really dark times. And that might sound a little trite, but it really is the thread that runs through all of my books. And it's not super overt. It's not really in your face, but it's something that sustained me so much through my own life. Seeing it in books meant a lot to me as a kid. So as an author, I like to push my characters, you know, have them go through some truly difficult experiences, but help them through the struggle by giving them hope. And so that's sort of the touchstone that I come back to in all my work, and that was what I loved writing about in All My Rage. I also love the lighthearted moments between two teenage characters. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's always fun. You know, the romantic moments, you know, that remind you of what, you know, the joys of young love and how beautiful that can be, right, as like a young adult or, you know, late teenager. Those are always fun. The musical references, I absolutely loved doing the musical references in this book. I love music. I've been a huge fan of, you know, rock and hip-hop and, you know, classical, anything since I was in 6th and 7th grade. And to be able to actually incorporate some of my favorite musicians and music into the book was an absolute blast.
Yeah. I want to talk about failure. We talk about hope. I'm jumping to failure because you've talked about this a lot, and it's interesting because we all have different views on failure, and failure often stops people doing what they want to do. You've never allowed that to stop you. You've seen it as an opportunity. So talk to us a little bit about what failure means to you and how you've kept going when, you know, for example, with All My Rage, which took you many years to write.
I am fortunate in that I'm really stubborn.
And that helps.
It probably drove my parents insane when I was a kid, but it's been really useful as an adult. So I think that failure has been everything for me. It's been a teacher. It's been a friend. It's been a critic. It's been a thing that's driven me. You know, and I joke a lot about how I started failing pretty young. Like, I remember when I got, you know, like a D on a spelling test, and it was like this huge event in my family. I was in first grade, and my parents were like, oh my goodness, how could you, you know? And so, you know, failure was something that I sort of experienced very young. But what I also experienced is that you could survive failure and be okay on the other side, and that you could learn from failure. I don't think there's been a single failure, you know, big failure that I've experienced that I haven't gotten something out of. And so that is how I shifted my mindset as a young person, is trying to take failure as an opportunity to learn instead of something that I need to avoid at all costs.
You know, one of the things that I hear a lot, Sabra, is that during the pandemic, people had these big plans. Oh, I've got time to do this, that, and the other. And of course, many did not do them because, you know, pressures and anxiety and political situation, you know, we had a lot going on. And so I hear from a lot of people, they have a sense of failure, and I don't really see it that way. It was a different time, and we have to take our lessons from that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think honestly, just surviving the pandemic is a victory.
Yeah.
You know, surviving with yourself intact, your sense of self intact, and, you know, even some of, hopefully, your friendships intact, in occupation of some kind, that's a huge victory. So, you know, I would hope that anyone who might be feeling that, if you're listening to this interview and you're still here, good job.
Absolutely. Absolutely. One of the things that Jodi Picoult said about your book is, about All My Rage, this is not the Sabra Tahir you know, but it's a Sabra Tahir you need to know. What does that mean to you?
Oh my gosh, I was so blown away when we got that blurb believe she'd read my book. I was like, oh my God, she held it in her hand. But I also couldn't believe that she connected with it so deeply. It was, all you can say about something like that is thank you. I was so grateful to her for not just reading the book, but for seeing it, you know, for understanding what I was trying to do. I mean, that was a gift. Thanks, Jody.
Well, it makes all those failures worthwhile, right?
Right, exactly.
Have you found with All My Rage that your audience has shifted? It's grown, it's expanded? Because,
you know, it's
different.
It's only just come out, so I don't know yet. It came out on Tuesday, March 1st, and so I noticed with An Ember in the Ashes that I really got to know who my audience was over the course of years. It took that long for me to understand what my audience, you know, the composition of my audience. And so I suspect that the same thing will happen with All My Rage, where it will take quite a while for me to see, you know, who connects with the book, you know, who can't stand it, who is indifferent. But I try not to think too much about the audience, just because I have written the book, I have done my job. I have researched, I have had its sensitivity read, I have put all my energy and effort into making it the best book it can be. Now it is out of my hands, and I cannot control what readers think of it. So I kind of let it go. It's like sending a kid to college, maybe. You
know? Yes, yeah.
I haven't done that, but maybe I imagine you might be able to, like, that, go and be like, good luck.
That's
go into the world and do good, little book.
Yes, yeah, that's a great perspective to have. And so I know you did a lot of research for the book. You talked with doctors and police officers. What surprised you during your course of research?
I spoke to a public defender, and it surprised me just the things that people can get thrown into prison for. I was very taken aback. It surprised me when I spoke to the police officers in Northern California. It surprised me sort of where they target drug sales. I won't go into it, but, you know, there are basically places that where you can get drugs, and I was like, really? You know, like, I just had no idea. I was surprised by, you know, how I was surprised by, in terms of on the medical side, you know, how much energy and effort has gone into, for example, providing resources for children who have dealt with assault or who have dealt with abuse in certain places, and then how many places don't have any resources at all, despite the fact that the numbers are very high in those communities. So all those things were things that I learned in the process.
Yeah, interesting. I wanted to just go back because I'd asked you about, audience and stuff, and I wanted to just say, when I'm doing my prep for the show, I always look to see what reviewers and pre-reviewers, you know, pre-launch reviewers have said, and I did not hear any, oh no, she's changed direction, so that's a good thing.
Yeah, it was really lovely that readers kind of went with it. I mean, I've had a few people say, why aren't you writing fantasy anymore? But the wonderful thing about getting to be an artist is you get to choose where you want to go next. And this was the path that I chose. And for the most part, I would say my readers have been really supportive, and my publisher has been very, very supportive. And that's wonderful.
Yeah, yeah. So I want to throw a couple of words out, Sabar, and I just ask you what they mean to you. And the first one is discipline.
You know, my whole life. and I don't have it. That's the other thing.
I love it. What about creativity?
Have to feed that beast constantly. Consume, you know, books, movies, television, music, you know, sunsets, vlogs, you know, anything to keep that well full.
I love it. Well, the book is called All My Rage, and I'm wondering what you'd like to leave listeners today with, Sabar.
I would love it if listeners would just give the book a shot and a chance, even if it seems like something you won't connect to. It's a very specific story, and yet I've had readers from all ages, from all over the world, and all walks of life say, I connected to this character or this character, and it's always been very surprising. So I hope readers will give it a shot and just try it out and get to know these two characters who are so close to my heart.
Well, Saba Tahir, it was a pleasure talking with you today. I know listeners can find out much more about you at your website, sabatahir.com, and I'll spell that sabatahir.com. And again, the book is called All My Rage. Saba Tahir, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much, Vicky. I appreciate your time.
If you have questions, comments, or feedback regarding today's podcast, you can reach me on our website at conversationslive.net. Thanks for joining us today. We'll have a new podcast go live next Wednesday. Until then, live well, live strong.
Radio is very competitive. Shows soar in popularity and then flame out. Sometimes, however, a real connection is made with an audience, and success blooms year after year. For over a decade, Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair has built a loyal following thanks to inspiring and stimulating conversation. Longevity, loyalty, exclusivity. Smart advertisers seek it out. With Vicky's valuable audience, the search is over. Discover the affordable, effective ways to advertise your business. Log on to conversationslive.net. That's conversationslive.net today.